I am Elle Penelope, author of epic fantasy and paranormal romance, and welcome to My Imaginary Friends, a look behind the scenes of an author mapping the worlds in my head and making them a reality. Hello, friends. Today is Friday, April 3rd, 2020, and this is episode 62 of My Imaginary Friends. I'm Leslie. So I do have an announcement. I will be participating in an online reading series with, in conjunction with the podcast How Writers Write. So if you are listening to this in real time, on Thursday, April 9th, 2020, at 8 p.m. Eastern, I will be doing an online reading, which will be hosted by my good friend, Therese Rennie Murphy, who is also a fabulous author. And I'll be doing a bit of a reading, and then we'll have a conversation about fantasy and who knows what else. So please check it out. You will have to register because it is through a webinar. So if you'd like to register, the address is howwriterswrite.com. The link will be in the show notes, and I hope that you sign up. There'll be a replay afterwards, and if you can't make it live, but please do check it out Thursday, April 9th, 8 p.m. Eastern. So this week's best thing is that I wrote the last scenes of Requiem of Silence, book 4 of Earthsinger Chronicles. I still have to go through and clean up some things and like little cleanup stuff that has to happen. But I did write full scenes, clean versions of the last scenes of the book, which are the last scenes of the series. So this happened yesterday on Thursday, and it took about, I did the last two scenes yesterday, and it took about 3 hours. And I did it first, and so it was like, I don't know, 11:30 in the morning when I finished. And I texted my friends, and I texted my brother. I just basically the words finished. And then I had to go eat. I really wanted to take a nap, but I still had work to do and a conference call to go to and stuff like that. But yeah, it was just this feeling, this sort of dazed, literally just, yeah, dazed. That's kind of how I felt. I still feel a little dazed. I have not yet gone back to start those cleanup things, which is basically reviewing a couple of scenes that I need to layer in some things that I discovered when I wrote the end. And the goal is to send it to my editor on Monday, the 6th of April, which is when it's due. I'm not entirely happy with it, but I'm also so close to it and I've struggled so much that I realize I have no perspective. So, yeah, I could spend some more time reviewing, revising, working on it again, but I think it's more beneficial for me to send it off, take time away, at least a month, and I'm sure it will be more than that because I don't think my editor's ever gotten back to me within a month. And, yeah, a few months. And then even if I don't hear back from her after like 2 months, I think I will come back to it with fresh eyes, review it, and make a plan for some changes. Because, yeah, I'm at that point where on an individual scene level, I feel like I have written decent scenes. And I feel like the book has done what I intended from the beginning. I mean, it matches my original synopsis, which is at the same time is vastly different than the original synopsis, but the differences are mechanical, you know, like, when I first plotted out this book and wrote that 14 page synopsis, all the stuff in it basically is there, is in the book. And so I did what I set out to do, but I'm not at the point where I can actually feel good about it yet. I just feel strange, you know? So was it yesterday or the day before when I was getting ready to do this last chapter, the final chapter of the book? I was like, how should it end? I was still having trouble dramatizing the scenes. Like, I didn't know where it should take place. I knew the information that had to come out, but I wasn't sure. I knew who the POVs would be. But like, yeah, where would it take place? What were the circumstances of this last scene in which we're getting this information? Because there's always options. For example, for one scene, I started fast drafting it and it took place in a bedroom. And then I was like, well, should it be the throne room? Should it be someplace else in the palace? It could be outside. It could be on a street corner. It could be in a field. Like, where does this happen? Because what are the actions that the character is doing while the information is coming out? And what is the conflict of the scene? It's the last scene of the book. How much conflict can you actually have in it? But I think every scene needs some level of something, even the last scene. And so I kind of just assailed by the possibilities, which is an issue I had very early on in my writing life, in terms of, I remember the first draft, well, not the first draft, because that was completely pantsed, but the first revision of Song of Blood and Stone. I was with I had a critique group at the time through Maryland Romance Writers, and I would be writing scenes and just be kind of overwhelmed by the possibilities of everything that could happen and whittling it down to what needed to happen. And a large part of learning how to write was figuring out how to wrangle all of the infinite possibilities for what your story could be and for how to tell the story into the thing that it becomes. And I thought I'd gotten past that, and I haven't dealt with that in a long time. But here it was just like, I didn't have a vision, I guess. Like, I knew the things that happened, but I didn't have that vision in my head. Because usually what happens is when I outline, I conceive of the scene, and before I sit down to fast draft it, it plays in my head. So I see where it is. I see from the POV character's perspective what's happening, what they're doing, what they're feeling, and it just plays like a movie. And the end of this book wasn't doing that. You know, that wasn't coming. And so I struggled with that on top of everything else. And because I'm trying to strike a tone, I'm trying to provide some kind of emotion, the closure, wrapping things up while still, you know, wrapping it up, but not too tight so that it feels. I think there are some times when an ending can feel zipped up too tight and strangled, you know, and I wanted it to be able to breathe, but be satisfying. So anyway, I figured out a way to do it. I'm not certain that it's the right way, but only time away from it will make me certain, I think. You know, I'm going to reread those scenes again today, potentially over the weekend, and do another pass, because I've only done one clean. I still have to do the polish pass on those scenes. But even that's not going to tell me, I don't think that it's not going to change the way I feel about it. It's like, I did it, it's finished, it's done. And maybe this is the way, you know, in 2 or 3 months when I look back on it, maybe I'll feel like, yeah, that's exactly the way it should be. And I've learned to trust my intuition and trust my subconscious, the muse. But sometimes when it doesn't come naturally, when I have to fight harder for it, it feels like it's more manipulated, you know? And the authorial hand is more on display than the times when I just close my eyes and I see it playing in my head as I conceive of it, and then I can write it. So that's kind of my worry about those last couple of scenes. And it's just I've put a lot of pressure on myself wanting to end it well. Yeah, like I said, I'll have to wait and see. But overall, the numbness is starting to give way to a little bit of giddiness. And I'm really looking for Monday when I hit send on that email and I'm done with this for a while. Just don't want to think about it for a while. So yes, that is my writing update. Oh, and I think I was saying that I had pulled some books off the shelf. I looked at Mockingjay, the last book in the Hunger Games series, and Quintana of Karen, which is the last book in the Lumetere Chronicles. Because I don't have that many, like, full series on my shelves. I think I have, like, an omnibus Lord of the Rings, which I wasn't about to crack open. But I thought about, now, the Hunger Games, I wasn't really feeling the end of that. just the emotional journey that I felt like that fizzled at the end, personally. Quintana of Karen, so Lumetere Chronicles, which I have read twice. And I was like, oh, I should read it again. Maybe during this time of this downtime, I will read some full series just to refresh myself on how I felt at the end of, you know, a series. And I think Quintana of Karen did it better. I remember feeling satisfied at the end of that series, but it's been years since I've read the whole thing. And other than that, well, I do have The Stone Sky, which I have not read yet, which is the third book in N.K. Jemisin's Broken Earth trilogy. And I need to space those out because those are exhausting to read. They're great, but they take a lot of mental energy and I do not have any to spare until Monday. So yeah, I looked at those and I just read the last chapter, not having reread the whole series of those, but just to see even just the tone, you know, and what it left you with. And the question of an epilogue. At the moment, this last book does not have an epilogue. All the other books have. But it feels right, you know, like this is the end. And I think the last chapter does what it needs to do so that I don't need an epilogue. So we'll see if that changes too. And I'm a person who loves an epilogue. So a lot of my feedback when I beta read for people is like, epilogue, please. Like I need something that ties it up a little bit better. But one thing I do feel confident about is that the last chapter does that. One thing I don't feel confident about at the moment is the last line. And that is something that might change this weekend because right now it's cheesy. And I think that there should be a little bit of treacle in your last line, but not too much. And I think I've erred on the side of too much sugar. So we'll see. Other things this week, we watched The Tiger King on Netflix. A lot of times I'm late on these sort of viral phenomenon, zeitgeisty things, but we did watch that. And if you have not, yes, you should. If you've heard the hype about it, or if you've somehow missed the hype about it, it's listed on my Netflix as the number one watched thing in the US. And there is a good reason. And memes abound. It is everything that you need if you're locked down. It is just, I don't even want to describe it. It's been everywhere, so sometimes I feel like it needs no introduction. I just kept seeing mentions of it, and I didn't know anything about it. And I was like, and I mentioned it to my husband, and so he did some research, and he's like, oh, no, we have to watch this. And I'm like, okay. So I went in kind of blind. And that's fine. Like, if you haven't heard about it, you have my addition to the recommendation engine that has been piling in the world to watch the show as soon as you can, because you will not regret it. Reading-wise, I have been DNFing tons of books. DNFing is do not finish, which just means I've been abandoning them after a few chapters, or sometimes after like 50-60%. I've been getting bored by a lot of books. Now, I tend to DNF fairly frequently anyway, because I'm kind of picky. But yeah, it's been a little bit unprecedented. And I don't know why nothing can really hold my attention for too long. Like, there's some books where I'll start it, I'm like, oh, I'm going to really like recommend this to my friends. And I keep going and I'm like, okay. And then it's 60% and I'm like, I'm bored. I don't care what happens to these people anymore. I'm done. And I just bow out. So that has pushed me to start rereading. And I don't reread a ton because I do like to have the new experiences, and there's so many new books coming out all the time and so many books that I want to read. But during these times when nothing can hold my attention, I often go back to an old favorite. So this week I reread Entreat Me by Grace Draven, which I think is my favorite Grace Draven, although they're all so good. Everyone I've ever read has been amazing. But Master of Crows was my first book by Grace Draven, which I think I'm going to read next. But yeah, something about Entreat Me has always just like stuck in my mind. So it is fantasy romance. It's sort of like a cross between Beauty and the Beast and The Taming of the Shrew. And she does something that's really interesting. She takes this lead, the heroine, Louvain, I'm not exactly sure if that's how you say it, but that's how I say it, who has the potential to be a very unlikable character. She is the quote-unquote shrew. She's called all kinds of names, which is, I mean, it's hilarious. And she's in on the joke. It's not like she's upset about this. She knows who she is. She's very self-aware. But she's never unlikable, in my opinion. Like, you have this hard-ass, unyielding, takes-no-prisoners character who is still endearing at the same time. And I think that's a really difficult task, and she did it really well. So I'm going to do a little bit of a Grace Draven binge reread, just because I know, and because it had been a long time since I read Entreat Me, so I actually forgot. So it was new to me, you know, like I forgot everything that happened in it. I remember the emotions that I felt after reading it, and I knew that I was going to enjoy it, but yeah, so it's nice. So I think I'll do Master of Crows next, and then we'll see about maybe Radiance. And maybe I'll reread some other favorite books. And, you know, I'm still buying and downloading new books. I mean, my Kindle's uncomfortably full with things I haven't read yet. I try to temper that because it does make me uncomfortable when I have a bunch of stuff on there that I haven't read. But it's also a mood thing. Like, a lot of the stuff on there that I've either pre-ordered and came in or saw recommended by people I trust and have bought, I'm just not in the mood for. So I have to honor that, and I'll just keep rereading really great work in the meantime. So people are using the lockdown to learn new skills. And so my husband said that one of his friends or someone he saw on the internet, this guy's wife, was teaching herself how to do fades from YouTube videos because nobody can go to the barbershop. And implicit in that, I felt, was an indication that maybe I should consider doing that too, because the following evening he gave himself a fade and did not turn out great. Now, fading, as far as I know, is like one of the hardest skills that a barber learns. I know that some barbers, like new barbers, will be like, yeah, I haven't quite got it yet. And they'll be really honest with you about not being able to fade. So I know it's hard, but I figure I can give it a shot. Like, he still has to go to work every day. Like, he's out in public. And it hurts my heart to let him walk out the door with his homemade fade. Not that mine will be any better, but yeah, one of those sacrifices you make for the people that you love. So I'm going to give it a shot, and we'll see how it goes. I'm so bad with hair. Oh, that reminds me, Tracy Livesey, who is a romance author in the area, she's been doing a thing on her social media during the lockdown where every day she does a picture in one of her wigs. And so it's great. I will link to it. I think it's really fun. I'm not a wig person. I have a hard time wearing hats. And like the idea of a wig, I've actually never worn a wig. I have no idea. But I, considering that even like a winter hat, like when it's cold outside, I have them extremely tender-headed. Anyway. I can't imagine being able to wear one like for a whole day. So I own no wigs, but I mean, a lot of Black women, you know, rely on wigs, as protective, just to change things up. And so she has a whole like cadre of wigs that she's been displaying. And, on one of them was like a wavy one that has its own baby hair. And she said in the comment that like, she's not really one of those people who can do amazing things with their baby hair. And I was like, me either. This whole obsession that seems to have arisen in the past few years about your edges has mystified me. I've watched lots of YouTube videos, and if you're on the video, you can see that I tried and failed to do something interesting with my edges. So I'm just hoping that that this trend will pass soon. There was the movie with Issa Rae and Marseille Martin, Little, and there was a line in that, and I felt personally attacked by it. It was like a diss line where she was like, da, 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 for someone who has so little control over their edges as you. And yes, I felt attacked, and I'm like, I have no control over my edges. I will admit it. I have failed in that regard. But I'm honest about it. Let's see. After I turn in the book, I don't know. I think I want to try to move into something else, but maybe just a short story. I do want to rest, and I am tired, but I don't want to rest too long because that can turn into stagnation. There was an article I saw, I think it was in the New York Times, that said, stop trying to be productive. And on the one hand, I get it. Like, this is a difficult time, like emotionally. So many people are going through difficult times dealing with this whole crisis. And all of these articles about, oh yeah, you know, so-and-so wrote the novel when he was in quarantine during 1918, and you can do this great thing and learn a language and learn to bake and learn to do fades, you know, like, I don't have a lot of energy for a lot of that. And I, you know, I did the whole podcast, Be Gentle With Yourself, and I believe that. But I think the title was clickbaity. I think the advice to stop trying to be productive is not good advice, you know. It's okay if you can't be productive. It is perfectly fine. But I don't think there's anything wrong with trying to be productive. And if you try and it doesn't work, that's okay. Rest, try again tomorrow. Because for me, being productive is helping me get through it. And even though I've needed help to be productive, I have, you know, again, needed the help of my friends to get on Google Hangouts and write when I wasn't feeling motivated. And that's been really useful. It's okay to, if you are one of those people who's learning to bake and on Duolingo and Babbel and learning to speak Japanese, I mean, good for you. Like, and if you are one of those people who is trying and failing, it's okay too. Like, there is nothing wrong with trying, with giving, because if I don't try, I'm just giving in to the depression. And for me, that's not helpful. Like, yeah, there's times when I do rest and give in, but I can't do that every day for weeks, you know, if we're going to be on lockdown all through April, all through May, who knows how long. The advice to just stop trying to be productive is not good advice. So do what you need to do, you know, like be productive or not, or try and fail and try again, wake up to fight again the next day. That's what works for me. Also, the latest episode of the KT Literary Podcast featured Michael Haspel, who is an author who we share the same agent. I really liked his book and his podcast, although he's kind of on hiatus right now. But anyway, he was on the KT Literary Podcast recommending games, like board games for your family during the lockdown. And he also recommended some solo, like one-player board games, which I didn't even know existed. I didn't know that was a thing. But after listening to this, I immediately called my local game store, which is Gritty Goblin Games in Fulton, Maryland, and they deliver board games to your house. And so I ordered these two single-player games, and the guy was very nice, and he dropped them off on the front porch. And so at some point when I have time, I'm going to play Hostage Negotiator and Proving Grounds, which, I can play by myself, and I don't have to wait for my husband to come home or be willing to play, and I'm really excited about that. So my game store actually also delivers puzzles, because when I first called, he was like on a run. He was like, it's been really busy because people discovered that we have just jigsaw puzzles. And so he's been like driving all around, dropping off games. And I'm glad because it's a local business that I can support, and hopefully they'll still be around at the end of this. And I'm excited to get the games. So we also have the game Pandemic. We've had it for years. My brother bought it for me for Christmas many years ago and have never played. And I've been trying to get my husband to play this game for the past 3 weeks. So maybe this weekend will be the weekend. I guess we'll see. But yeah, that's it for me this weekend. Hopefully I'll be playing games, and maybe I'll clean out my pantry, which is in dire need of cleaning. Or maybe that'll wait until actually after I turn in the book. I will save all pantry cleaning until the book has been sent to my editor. I hope that you have a wonderful week and that you are staying safe, being productive, resting, doing all the things, and not going to stir crazy. And remember, April 9th at 8 p.m. Eastern is my live reading. You can register at howwriterswrite.com. For episode show notes and to sign up for the Footnotes newsletter and get the show notes in your email box, go to myimaginaryfriendsshow.com. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts and check out the video episodes on YouTube. I would love a rating and review to help support the show. And My Imaginary Friends is part of the Frolic Podcast Network. For more fantastic podcasts, go to frolic.media/podcasts.